Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life.
Welcome to the Gravity Commons Podcast, where we don't know what we're doing. We have a little countdown to begin the podcast. And
we're here.
It goes on from 5 to 1, and about 3, Ben asked a question that we didn't have time to answer.
Just making sure we're all on the same page.
Well,
we're doing the intro.
We had 2.5 seconds to get on the same page. And I'm not sure.
It's working out fine.
Yeah.
It's working flawless. Out fine.
No one will know at home. Ben. And Chrissy's here too.
Hello. Yep.
And we are at the tail end of summer where kids are going back to school. And another season begins in the life of our family. So, Christy, did you move your son into college?
By the time people listen to this podcast, I will have cried the tears. I've already cried tears. Yeah, we, Baylor and moving Soren, moving my dad, there's a lot going on. So.
Yes.
Woo-hoo.
Yes. Your dad was living with you. You moved him into another facility and you're moving Soren out. So what that means is by September, you'll have 2 people living with you that you don't know yet.
You sound like Paul. No, right now we have no one's planning on living with us, which is kind of a minor miracle.
That you know of.
That I know of.
Yeah, you said no one's planning on living with you, but there might be a line of people plotting for those empty bedrooms. They're like,
I know one person who is praying every night that basement bedroom stays empty and his name is Langham.
Poor kid. He's such a good kid and such a good attitude this whole season. So, yes, I'm sure he's happy as a lark to be back in his bedroom and live a normal life.
Yeah. But Christy, I don't know if I've told you this, but we visited Christy and Paul out in the Springs several years ago, and we were talking about what to get for dinner one night, and Langham looked at you, and he's like, can we get chicken tenders at the club? And I just want you to know that sentence has come into our family. And anytime anybody gets chicken tenders, Langham is quoted.
I love it.
Anywho, it's good to see you both. And today we're wrapping up our brief little series on anger. We started with an exploration of anger as a kingdom emotion. Christy, we talked with you about that and about some of the work you did on your dissertation. And then we interviewed Rick Pidcock about an article he wrote on how anger was at play in a dust up between a ministry leader and someone he had hired. And it was investigated and all that. And then there's been aftermath and more aftermath after that. And so we thought we'd just do this final podcast to sort of see where we are, see what we've learned. I'm going to throw out 6 proposals that I think are tentative, but I think that I'm chewing on, and I'd love to hear your feedback, the two of you on. Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
I vote for it. I vote yes.
Okay, good. All listener, right. I told you we didn't know what we were doing. Here we go.
We're making this up as we go. It's fine. Mm-hmm.
There were a couple quotes though that I wanted to start with here that I sent you, Ben. Would you read these 2? These are by Dallas Willard.
Yes.
And if you've listened to our podcast for any length of time, you've heard Ben quote Dallas Willard. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be apropos for him to quote him again.
Yeah. These are from memory, just so you know. No, just kidding. I'm reading here, but these are definitely quotes from my boy D. Willie that have been important for me. So, this is from The Divine Conspiracy, if you're interested. Dallas Willard said, "There is nothing that can be done with anger that cannot be done better without it." He also said, anger and condemnation, like vengeance, are safely left to God. We must beware of believing that it is okay for us to condemn as long as we are condemning the right things. It is not so simple as that. I can trust Jesus to go into the temple and drive out those who are profiting from religion, beating them with a rope. I cannot trust myself to do so. Those are the quotes.
Yeah. All right. I know that's a lot, but I thought those two quotes were related. Thoughts on that? What do you like about it? What do you want to push back on?
Ben, I'm interested to hear, because you said that you like these kind of have meant something to you. If you've read them a couple times or whatever, quoted them. I'd love to hear what you think.
Yeah. So on the Enneagram, I'm an Enneagram 1. And listener, if you don't know what that means, it means that, so each of the 9 Enneagram types sort of have a core, I don't know what you'd call it, passion maybe is the old fashioned term. And for ones, the core passion or sort of emotion that takes you away from God, maybe that's a way of talking about passion, is anger. And so there's different kinds of things that happen with anger, with different types. Some people express their anger, some people ignore their anger. But Enneagram ones repress their anger. They push it down because Enneagram ones want to be good little boys and girls. They want to do the right thing. And anger often leads to doing the wrong thing and hurting people. And so I think the quotes were important for me because I recognized that there was a driving force in my life called anger that was hurting the people around me. My anger would flare up, you know, in retrospect, I can see this now, but it would flare up when I felt slighted, when I felt disrespected, when I felt that someone was, you know, ignoring me or, you know, that kind of thing. So my anger would flare up and most of the time I'd repress it, but that usually led to just a lot of bitterness and resentment towards the people around me. And I knew that was wrong and I didn't like how that felt. And then every once in a while it would boil over and I would express my anger in ways that hurt the people around me. So when I first read these quotes, they were really helpful for me in just recognizing that, yes, you know, and there's a lot of scripture passages that explicitly state things like put away anger. And so it resonated with me to say like, yeah, that seems absolutely true to me. I should safely leave those things to God. Now I have some other thoughts about it now. But maybe we can start with those, the ways that I resonate with these quotes and the ways that they have been helpful for me.
Yeah. So then maybe the first quote, you would affirm there is nothing that I can do with anger that I cannot do better without it.
Yes. I think that was helpful for me. Yes. There's some nuance that I would put on it now. But I think that when I first read these quotes, I was thinking about the anger that was coming up in my life and through me and through my body. And that felt very true to me. Yes, absolutely. So,
do you resonate with that, Matt?
Well, I've hurt a lot of people with my anger. Like, I didn't realize how harmful my anger was until like courageous people were able to confront me with it. Because I grew up in a family system where people were just kind of angry all the time. And the only way to protect yourself from angry people was to get angry or to fight or flight, right? Like, and when you couldn't run away, you just had to anger up, you know? And so, I think that because I've become aware of how damaging my anger can be, even when I don't recognize it as anger, that I'm very suspicious of my anger, very suspicious of it. But I do take issue with the word nothing.
Yeah, that there is nothing that can be done.
Right. Yeah. I think it's too exclusive for me. It's too universal for me. And I guess I say that because, you know, and we get into trouble here sometimes when we talk about Jesus because even Dallas Willard's second quote, right? I can trust Jesus to go into the temple and drive out those who are profiting from religion, beating them with a rope. I cannot trust myself to do so. You often hear, anytime you try to hold up Jesus as a model for humanity, people will say, well, that's when Jesus is playing the God card or something like that, which is just, I don't know. That makes no sense and is borderline heretical to me. But I want to say to Dallas, if that's true, then Jesus had no warrant to be angry. As a fully human person, he could have and should have done what he did without anger.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, or the other one, right, where, and this is actually the irony of the quote, is that Willard was actually very serious about calling people to follow Jesus, right? So that was actually a big part of his project, was Jesus is not like God in a way that, but basically like, we can actually follow Jesus. Jesus actually intended for us to do the things that he did. So Willard is very clear about that. But then there's this exception where he's like, I can trust Jesus to do this, but I can't trust myself to do it. Hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And so, so either Jesus shouldn't have been angry, or this is the one occasion when I should say, I'm going to let Jesus do that, but I can't follow him. I can't follow him in doing that.
Yeah. This is where I don't agree. I don't agree with either one of the statements. And here's why. The reason is because I believe that like anger is not bad. It's just that we don't know how to navigate it. And so I think we talked last time about sound and unsound anger. And kind of what I hear in this quote is just the perspective of unsound anger. And I think, no, like there are lots of reasons why people, God, but also us can be angry and be able to express it and navigate it. And it's not sin. Like, I mean, I think sometimes people like kind of think like, oh, in your anger, do not sin, implying that there's a way to be angry and for it to not be something that doesn't look like God.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I agree with you, Christy. I think it's maybe an example, even that second quote, where he says anger and condemnation like vengeance are safely left to God. And I know he might be listing things there, but there's almost an implicit equating of anger and condemnation. Like we must beware of believing that it is okay for us to condemn as long as we're condemning the right things.
Yes.
So he's equating anger and condemnation, which I would say, no, those are two different things, right? So Christy, like you have said, anger is just an emotion. It arises spontaneously in response to things that happen to us. So irrationally, if I stub my toe, I'm mad at the door, which is like, that's stupid. But I don't have a choice in that. I can't rationally just say like, oh, I shouldn't be angry at the door. It's not the door's fault. I feel angry because I was hurt, you know? And that's just a normal thing that pops up. Now, I have a choice in that moment, you know? I can take a couple breaths, you know? I can come to my senses, or I can yell at my kids, or, you know what I mean? Like, or kick the dog. I can do things that are harmful with my anger if I indulge it, if I pour, you know, fuel on it, you know? I can punch a hole in the door, you know? And I think there's ways of thinking about that where it's like there's a bit more nuance there. So I can be angry at someone who hurts me. And then in response to that anger, I can, you know, begin to plot my revenge, right? It's like, okay, yes. Well, now we're sinning, yes. Right? Or I can, you know, do something that feels more productive and helpful in my anger.
I would even argue that anger is like a little flag. You know, we talk a lot in Gravity about Kairos. Mm-hmm. And I argue that all emotions are or can be little flags to say, let me dig deeper into what's going on underneath the surface in me as an opportunity to learn, to grow, to be transformed. And I think anger is not excluded from the other emotions that God actually works in and through to teach us.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I guess my final comment about what I want to push back on here is that I think one of the myths is that anger is wrong. And I think if we see anger as wrong or bad, we will, at best, keep ourselves away from things that need our attention.
Absolutely.
And at worst, we will suppress or repress emotions that then will come out usually sideways.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this reminds me, I'll just say one more thing about this and then I want to get into these propositions. What did you call them about anger?
Proposals.
Proposals.
Tentative proposals.
But it's in some ways, it's the same confusion that we have about sin and temptation, where sometimes I think if we don't understand the difference, we will feel defeated before we begin.
Yeah.
To be tempted is not to sin. And to be tempted is to have a thought of sinning, right? To be tempted is to think, you know, I sure would like to punch that guy in the face, you know, for what he said to me or whatever. Like that, imagining it is the temptation. And I think if we imagine that, to just imagine that or to have the thought of it is a sin, I think we do run the risk of feeling defeated before we begin, of thinking, man, I've been trying to get rid of anger, but I still feel angry. And, you know, like I must, you know, we either heap condemnation on ourselves or we, you know, give ourselves over to our anger because we assume it's already, you know, a lost cause. Or we attempt to ignore or suppress our anger in an effort to sort of convince ourselves and to convince God and to convince those around us that we are holy because we never feel angry. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, and I think, I don't know, just anger or sound anger always points to injustice. There's something going on where our attention needs to be drawn over and because of some injustice that's happening. And then we get to move, we get to act, we get to actually like kind of be a picture of God in the midst of that injustice, depending on how we respond.
Yeah. 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 Well, maybe then let's move into some of these proposals because I think that what we're naming here is related to them. And I'd love to get your feedback. Maybe I'll take your feedback and make these proposals less tentative. So the first is this, you know, our axiom, from our book, Having the Mind of Christ, is that God's love always reckons with power. And I want to suggest that anger is a kind of power. And our anger then must be seen as a kind of power. And we have to reckon with that.
I agree with that. I feel like, I think you see the ways in which people get angry and what people get angry about can also be seen in this, power hierarchy, meaning someone with power can get angry and somebody maybe without power can get angry, but how it's used, how it's expressed, the good that it could do, I think is really different based on where that person is and kind of the position that they're in. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now, a word from a sponsor.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, a 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life God shares with us. It's a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying new practices. In the Gravity Formation Course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence. And to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us towards holistic flourishing. More transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people all over the world in this formation framework, and it has helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives, to learn how to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
All right, let's get back into our conversation. I'm still working through the different ramifications of calling it a kind of power. I definitely feel like it moves us, right? So anger moves us to protect. It moves us to seek safety. It moves us away from harm. And it can, you know, assert, you know, boundaries or, you know, that kind of a thing. So in the sense that anger is an emotion that moves us to act, I would say, sure, that's a power. But I think in different definitions of what power might be considered, other people might say, well, maybe power is the act. Power is setting a boundary. Power is, you know, having the authority to, you know, set a boundary or say no, you know, that kind of a thing. Whereas maybe if I was going to nuance it, I might say anger is the impulse to use power to accomplish something that is bad, like, or against something. So usually anger happens when, like,
you experience a threat,
right? You experience a threat. Our will is thwarted. We like, something we're seeking to like overcome or get away from harm. So I'm thinking about anger as the impulse to do that. And then maybe power is the action that we take, but I could also see it this way as well. That it's a kind of power in that it moves us towards taking those kinds of actions.
Yeah. I'm interested, Matt, when you wrote that, which one were you thinking?
Which what?
Like, were you thinking that power, that anger kind of moves us to have power, to have action? Or were you thinking that anger within us is powerful?
I actually hadn't thought about the delineation you two are making, so this is helpful for me. It's kind of a development. Listener, I did tell you that we don't know what we're doing.
These are tentative proposals. We're working it out.
I don't know. I want to hold both those as open-handedly. I think, you know, I mean, neuroscience talks a lot about what it takes neurochemically for us to move.
Yeah.
For us to do something. And we actually usually need dopamine. That's the chemical that our brain uses to move us towards something or away from something.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if anger is a kind of fuel.
Yeah, because I would argue that anger, for sure, more than like fear, maybe even more than joy, is a very strong emotion that can fuel us to do something, to act.
Yeah. All right. Well, then maybe we can go here to the second proposal. And that is, not all anger is loving, but some love is expressed via anger. What I had in mind here, let me just maybe double click on this for a brief moment. Probably the most helpful understanding of God's wrath that I've heard is it's described as God's love when it encounters injustice. So God's wrath is God's love opposing injustice. And so then wrath isn't essentially like retributive, meaning there's some kind of punishment meted out to balance some sort of honor, abstract honor ledger somewhere. But rather it's God's commitment, loyalty to God's creation, that it will be good. And when not good is encountered by the good pushes back against the not good. And then we see all through the scriptures that God gets angry. And it seems that God gets angry when God's good creation is being compromised by not good. I don't know. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, coming back to the quote from Willard, Jesus is seen. I think that's, it's more helpful for me to think about Jesus, because I think if I just think about God, there's an element of that where I'm always wanting to be careful when we talk about the wrath of God. I like how you've described it, Matt, but I think one of the bad ideas we get about God is that he is subject to emotions, subject to passions as we are. So God's wrath in our imagination feels like God raging, you know,
yeah.
God losing control,
losing his right? biscuit.
Yeah. Just like flying off the handle, you know, and just like enraged at something rather than, well, you know, I think we get into, there's a lot of downstream theological problems if mm-hmm. we think of God as having emotions in that way. So I find it more helpful to think about Jesus, because Jesus is the prototype of a new humanity,
yeah.
you know, and also obviously the divine Son of God. But I think what Jesus shows us in his humanity is what is possible for us as human beings in right relationship with God. So Jesus' emotions never took him on a trip away from God.
That's yes. right.
Mm-hmm. Right? So my anger has often taken me away from God, where I start hurting people. And I do, like, there's a sense in which I've sort of lost my mind, mm-hmm. right? When I come back to my senses, I feel ashamed, right? I'm like, oh, why did I do that? So I'm not like rationally choosing to do these things. I'm like, I've lost control, you know? But I think what we see in Jesus is that there is a way of being angry and not losing control, not lashing out, not harming people. And so I think that's, you know, I think that's a way that I affirm that proposal, that yeah, there was cleansing of the temple, which the other quibble I would have with Willard's statement is that he yeah. said he was beating people with a rope, but it's very clear that the reason Jesus was using the whip on the animals. He was telling the animals to get out of there. He wasn't mm-hmm. hitting people with a rope.
No.
Which is another, you know, another, I think, evidence that Jesus isn't lashing out there. He's not just swinging a rope around. He's doing something intentional. He's clearing the temple. And the way that you get animals to move is, you know, you make a little whip and they mm-hmm. respond to that. Anyway, I think I would say, yeah, obviously Jesus seems, there's anger that seems to move him in the Gospels toward prophetic action, you know, that opposes injustice, like in the temple. Anger seems to move him to heal people and raise people from the dead sometimes. So yeah, I think anger in Jesus, love can be expressed via anger. Anger can move Jesus to love people.
Yeah, I would agree. Not all anger is loving. We all know that because we know ourselves.
Right.
But the opposite, but the end of that is some love is expressed via anger. And I've experienced that. I've experienced that actually through you guys. When I've been in a situation where I was mistreated in the way that you, I remember being on the phone. I remember being in the car with you, Matt, and explaining what was going on. And you even said, "I'm angry on your behalf." And there was something really loving to me in that, of helping me see the injustice and then having an emotion on behalf of me that was anger. And to me, that was love. Yeah.
Can we pause right there? Because I want to know, Christy, putting yourself back in that place. I actually remember that conversation. How does me being angry on your behalf in that situation, how is that different than if I would have said, "Christy, I'm really sad for you"?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think in Christian worlds, we use sadness or frustration rather than anger because it feels safer. And somehow having somebody say, "This is wrong and I'm angry," gave me courage to actually name the truth of what was going on. And at that time, I felt like I didn't have a lot of courage. So I was like kind of on the coattails of the courage you were giving me because of your anger.
Yeah. So sadness. Yeah. So anger is validating in some ways or empowering.
Yeah, for sure. And I think made me feel not so crazy. I was like, am I supposed to be feeling these feelings of anger? And then to have somebody name it, like, yes, this is injustice, what is happening. And our right response is anger.
Well, this is, I don't know. I know we don't want to get too specific in those details, Christy, but this kind of leads into my third tentative proposal, which is that policing or chastising the anger of the powerless is a power move. What this looks like is sometimes it's tone policing, where you say something in a way that isn't, giving the benefit of the doubt or exaggeratingly kind. Sometimes it's, "You sound really angry," so that then the anger of the affronted person becomes the issue rather than what caused the affronted person to be angry.
That's right. Yeah.
Maybe I think we use that word power move. We use that colloquially, but I think it might be helpful to like tease out, well, what do you mean by power move? Mm-hmm. What does it actually do when the anger of those who've been mistreated is policed or repressed or, belittled?
Yeah. That's good, Ben. I've seen policing anger as a way to sideline or silence dissent. Mm-hmm. It also sometimes is I've heard this as like a conversation stopping statement. Right? Mm-hmm. So I won't discuss X with you if you're angry. Right. Now, that's been used to help me, right? When I've gotten to a place where I'm communicating in a harmful way to people, I'm harming people. People set good boundaries with me, and they just say, "I'm not willing to have a conversation with you when you're in this place," right? But I'm speaking more about not one person like yelling at another, but one person getting really worked up, maybe about an injustice, Yeah. And then the topic is off the table because now you being worked up is what I want to center on the table.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think maybe even to further clarify that, this is helpful for me to think about what's happening here. The difference, another difference between like you, Matt, like getting, you know, yelling and like all of a sudden the conversation is not going to be productive. I don't want to talk to you when you're like this, you know, that kind of thing. The difference between that and tone policing is also that the assumption is we can talk about this later. Like, yeah. You know, I can see you're really upset about this. I don't think a conversation right now would be helpful, but let's talk about it later. Whereas tone policing or, you know, policing the anger of the oppressed is usually the move is to delegitimize their claim. Basically to say, because you're angry, what you're angry about doesn't count and we don't have to talk about it. And I won't talk about it.
Yes.
So all I want to talk. So it's a dodge from the issue that the angry person is wanting to talk about. Hey, I want to talk to you about this. And I think the difference between like tone policing is like, well, you're angry. So that's not a real issue. Mm. You know, the real issue is your anger and I won't talk about it. Mm-hmm. Whereas it might be a helpful thing to say, I had no idea. Let's talk about it. But you know, if you are yelling at me about it, like, can we take 10 minutes? And then I want to hear, what are you angry about?
Yeah.
And oftentimes just that move can actually calm someone's anger to know, I'm curious to know why you're angry. I want to hear what's going on for you. And that sometimes, because oftentimes I think when we are mistreated or when we're angry about some other people being mistreated, our anger is moving us toward saying, like, I need to be seen here. My plight needs to be heard. And once someone says, I want to hear, I think almost immediately most people will feel less angry.
Yeah.
They'll be like, okay, let's talk about this, you know?
Yeah.
So.
I think I'm going to say specifically faith communities, a lot of times something can happen that is wrong and someone can get angry about it, but the person that did something wrong didn't mean to, maybe mm-hmm. even their motive wasn't to cause anger. And so then that becomes the thing, like, don't be angry. I didn't mean to do that. Mm-hmm. And so there's like this policing of, you can't be angry because you have to believe that my intent and my motive was pure, even if the action and the impact isn't pure.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's another way of policing the anger is saying, well, you should have known what I meant, you know? And so you should immediately stop being angry. You know what I meant.
Right. And there's conversations to be had about, you know, how are we responsible for our impact? Mm-hmm. To you know, what manner and to what degree are we responsible for our impact? Especially when the impact is affected by another person's story, another person's wounds, another person's experiences, right? So that is a legitimate, needed conversation to have. But what you're naming, Christy, is that, just because I don't intend harm doesn't mean I can't cause harm.
Right.
And to go back to my intention when somebody's upset with me serves to justify myself and invalidate somebody else's hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is number four, operating in anger as one with power can lead to harm. Mm-hmm. I think we're talking about this a lot. Maybe that proposal needs to be moved up. But, you know, I would say, like, my 13-year-old daughter gets angry with me and she can say things that hurt me. But if she says something to me and I say the same thing to her, I have more potential for causing harm than she does.
100%.
Right.
Now, I think that's really clear in a parent-child. Like, that's an arena where that's more obvious to us than other arenas mm-hmm. where it's less obvious to us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's one example of this is just, you know, some of the things that I've learned about my anger is that as a white man, sort of at the top of the so-called food chain, you know what I mean? Like, just in terms of the cultural cachet and power that I carry, my anger is often more harmful than most of the other people that I'm talking to. You know, if they're younger than me, if they're not white, if they're a different gender than me, you know, like a woman, that there is just an awareness that I have to have, I think, of the power that I carry.
Yeah.
That feels dangerous to other people, even if I have no intent on hurting them, you know? Like it's similar to me. It seems similar to me then, I wasn't always aware of this, but now I am aware. I don't know how I became aware, but, when I am walking behind a woman on a street who is walking alone and I'm coming up behind a woman, I have become aware that that will feel dangerous to her.
Yeah. Especially when you're growling.
Right. I've stopped growling.
Good.
I've stopped yelling random Good. Phrases. So that's been helpful. But you know, I can be the most gentle person in the world, but I'm a man and she's a woman, and just the culture we live in, the patterns of abuse and other things that are just statistically present mean that I know probably she is tensing and, you know,
right,
afraid in some ways. And so I don't know. I try to be aware of that. Sometimes I can't change my behavior. Sometimes I'll cross the street, you know, if I can, just to say like, hey, trying to signal as much as I can. I don't know. That strikes me as a similar kind of thing where I just have to be aware that my walking on the street carries a different weight than a woman walking on the street. So too with our anger. My anger carries a different weight because of the power of relationships.
Even the size of our bodies, right? Sure. If a 6'2" man is angry and with his body showing that he's angry, that feels pretty different than, you know, if a 4-year-old is angry. And
yes,
it's just
more potential for harm.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Let's get back to the show. There's probably an axiom or a proposal here that's linked to gender, because I do think anger gets scripted differently, whether you're white or black, whether you're a male or female, et cetera. And it does different work culturally. Like, culturally, there's different meaning assigned to anger. Mm-hmm. You know, if a woman gets angry, she's being a bitch or she's too emotional.
Right.
If a man gets angry, he's passionate.
He cares a lot about that.
Even right? Within races, I feel like that's different.
Totally. 100%.
Right? Like a black mama yelling at her kids somehow is like, I don't know if this is true, but it somehow seems a little bit more culturally appropriate than if a white mama is yelling at her kids. Hmm. And maybe that's just me, or maybe it's just because, you know, when I hear stories of my friend Del Reese, like yelling at her kids, I'm like, yep, yep, yep. You know, like, yeah. I don't know. So I don't know. Maybe people have different opinions on that. I'd like to hear, but at least that's been my experience.
Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of a interlude there. All right, final three. We can kind of move a little quicker. And Christy, this gets back to something you said, that anger is usually a great window and less often a reliable leader. Mm-hmm. Anger tells us important information. And this goes with the second one, so I'll just kind of relate to this. It has its limits. So it's a good mover. But it's a bad master.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, just last night, Paul and I had a date. We came home from the date. The kids were like all in the kitchen, and all of a sudden everybody needed something. Like, last night was the last night to register for like fall sports. And I was like, how in the world have we like gotten up to like the last minute before we have to do all of this for four children. And then Kira was like, oh my gosh, I need to have like my 6 hours with an instructor to drive before I take my driver's test to get my license. And it all has to be done by this date in September. And the next thing I know, I'm not kidding, it's 11:45 at night. I finished like doing all the stuff. I was still struggling with like this stupid website and I couldn't get it. And I was angry. I could tell my body was feeling angry, but you know what? It wasn't at the computer. It wasn't even at the task. It was pointing to the fact that it's 11:45 and I do not do well after 9:30. Yeah. Like I'm tired. I need to go to bed, you know? And so sometimes it's as simple as that. And sometimes it's pointing more to like things that, I don't know, are more relationally connected.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think, I've started to recognize, in my body when anger has dominion, when anger is, and this goes to our last proposal, which is anger is best served as a cocktail, not as a double shot. And what I mean by that is I'm learning how to allow anger, but allow other emotions to be with it, like a cocktail, right? So anger and compassion, or anger and kindness, or anger and patience. Like, I don't know if that's an emotion. It's probably not. But when I get in trouble when anger is just like straight up anger.
Yeah. Anger and rage. You're like, no thanks. I don't want that cocktail.
Does that make sense?
That's well said. Yeah, I like that. I like the visual of that because it really helps.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm also struck by several of the things that you named there. I don't think are emotions. Compassion's an emotion, but kindness and patience are both virtues.
Yeah, you're right.
And so, but I think there's something to that, though, that maybe that's part of the cocktail, and maybe that's part of how to be angry and sin not, right? Is to allow anger and say, this is an important, message that I'm receiving. Right. I need to pay attention to this, but I don't need to get drunk on it. Right. I don't need to just allow it to pull me wherever it wants.
Indulge it, maybe.
Maybe
it's like an indulgence.
Yeah. I mean, Willard did talk about indulging our anger as well. And so, I think that concept was really helpful for me, was to be like, I began to learn how to recognize, okay, I feel angry. I can feel it in my jaw clenches, my chest feels tight. I can feel angry, and then I have a choice. I can allow it, but then also practice patience. I can allow it and, you know, take deep breaths. I can allow it and say, I can't talk right now, right? Or I can indulge it and just use it like to power up, use it to like power some sort of self-righteous, you know, whatever. Like there is a way of indulging it. I think that is, it's actually, I think one of the things that I learned about it was that it's pleasurable. One of the reasons that it feels good to indulge our anger is that it's pleasurable to indulge our anger. There's a sense of, I don't know, self-righteousness or justification that giving yourself over to that, it's sort of in the moment, it feels good. And that's part of the temptation. That's part of the resistance is like saying, I can't trust this emotion right now to lead me on a path of righteousness. I do need to allow it and find out why is it here, but I have to practice virtue at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Christy, any thoughts on that before we wrap up?
I mean, my only thought as you were talking is how often I move my body. When I get angry, I'm like, I got to go for a walk. Yeah. And part of that is like, is processing and moving my body to be like, why am I feeling this way? What is happening? Yes. What is this pointing to? What's it telling me? What's the story I believe? Is it accurate or not? You know? Mm-hmm. And that's a way for it to not master me, to not control me, but to actually be able to navigate and learn and grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to wrap up here, but can I just say one final thing? I think
I'll allow it.
Another proposal I want to make, and I've just thought of this. The ability to not be angry is a privilege.
Hmm. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. All right. So, like, I'm trying to learn how to stay informed, but also not put my nervous system on tilt mm-hmm. with everything that's going on in the world.
Sure.
Right. Like, I woke up this morning and read about the mRNA vaccines being defunded. gerrymandering happening in Texas and just a number of things. And I was like, mm-hmm. I'm going to stop reading this, mm-hmm. you know? And, I can stop thinking about things that make me angry because they don't directly threaten my existence. I've shared a few years back, my son was being bullied and gym class, and we contacted the teacher, and within 10 minutes they called us, or they set up a phone call, and then they moved him out of his class. And I was able to not be as angry about it because of the responsiveness of people to protect my son. Mm-hmm. But if no one was responsive or listened to me about the dangers my son was incurring, and he was subjected to that every day, I don't know if I have the privilege of not being angry about it because I have less power. So I think being able to do things about threats or injustices, whether it's just closing a window on our web browser or because of our position, because of our education, because of our school system that's well-funded, et cetera, or affluence, being able to rectify wrongs quickly. If I'm in a place that's vulnerable, more powerless, less affluent, less connected, and I don't have power over injustices like that, I have to stay up to date on where ICE is because, my children were born here and they have birthright citizenship, but does anybody care about that anymore? I don't have the privilege of not being angry that my kids are being targeted and could be taken from me. Because if I choose to just let that go, I may not be able to protect or be vigilant. I'm speaking in hypotheticals here, but there is some aspect where I think the more power you have, and the more access you have to changing your environment allows you to mitigate some of the things that necessarily provoke anger in ways that other people don't. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I hear what you're saying, and I agree. And I also think that if that's you, like if there's a situation where there is injustice and you have no power, and this sounds so churchy, I don't mean it to sound churchy, but I think even in that, God meets us in that. And there is, there's like internal work that gets done. Circumstances might not change. And so I hear what you're saying is like the outward circumstance Like I have the privilege to not be angry because of certain things, but I do believe that like there's good work that happens. God works in it at all and cares about it all. And I know that that sounds insensitive to some people who are going through real injustices. That's not my heart. I don't mean it, but I do think, at least in my life, when I haven't had the power and the external circumstances to change, there has been internal change that's happened in me as I've sat in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's right. And that this, I'm just experimenting with this line of thought. So, again, we don't, you know, we didn't plan any of this. We don't know what we're doing. But I wonder if, cause sometimes when I hear people talk about privilege, I agree, but then I also have seen then people try to, I don't know, they try to distance themselves from their privilege as though that were the right thing to do. So I'm just going to read the news on and be angry all the time. And that's how I'll practice righteousness.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? And so I sometimes wonder if it's obviously true that if you're not being mistreated or if you can change mistreatment more readily than others, you are going to have fewer occasions to be angry sort of automatically. And I think you can either then choose to insulate yourself from, you know, the problems of other communities like Latino people around you who are scared of, you know, ICE. You can either just say, not my problem, and sort of indulge that privilege perhaps. Or I think the other move is not to try to eliminate your privilege, but it's to leverage it perhaps on behalf of those who don't have it.
Yeah.
And there's a solidarity move that I think is more helpful to make than the move of, I have to become less privileged.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just have to be angry more. I shouldn't ever turn off the news when it makes me angry. And that'll be how I do it. It's like, no, that not necessarily. What does it look like to move in solidarity with those who are being harmed?
Yeah.
Because oftentimes they're the ones who will teach us to say, you can't read the news all the time. Like, no, there be dragons. Like you can't actually effectively deal with injustice if you're just like, if your nervous system's on tilt all the time, as you said, Matt.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Well, we could do a whole other podcast because there's always more to say, right? There's always more to think through and always more to ask.
That's why we keep doing podcasts, I guess. There's always more to say.
Yeah. Well, speaking of things that make you angry, did you hear that the Fishers Police Department where I live was broken into and all the toilets were stolen, Chrissy?
No, I didn't because I don't live in Fishers.
Well, let me tell you, the police have nothing to go on.
Oh, my goodness. But
if you've got a 12-year-old.
They're going to love that joke.
You might have to explain it to them, but then they'll love it. And that's the only segment of the population that will enjoy that joke. Mm-hmm. All right, everybody.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Hopefully that joke made you a little angry. Good old fashioned.
You're welcome.
Anger.
You're welcome. You know, just a little experiment with anger for y'all. All right. See you next time, friends.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast, and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect there with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith and spirituality and whatever else comes up. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. Finally, we would love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, you can go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the start recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.